You're listening to Red Eye on Co-op Radio at CFRO 102.7 FM.
How does this fit with your image of a university in Canada? A longtime tenured professor is fired, his science lab and office locked, he's banned from campus, and then arrested and handcuffed. All this ostensibly because of his classroom teaching methods. This has happened to Professor Denis Rancourt at the University of Ottawa, and we've reached Denis at his home to learn about these and related events. Greetings, Denis, and welcome to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
I'm happy to be here. Hello, Mordecai.
You're a physicist. You're an environmental scientist. Professors are often most evaluated by their publications, by their grants, by awards they've received. Have there been any criticisms of any of this in relation to you?
None at all. I mean, I'm highly recognized as a scientist. I've received some of the largest research grants in my faculty, and so that's not in question at all.
So what does seem to be in question is classroom teaching philosophy. How does yours differ from other colleagues at the University of Ottawa?
Well, you're right. That is the pretext that is being used by the university to dismiss me. But it is a pretext, but we can go into it nonetheless. I'm being accused of having attributed A-pluses in one fourth-year and graduate physics course, having attributed them arbitrarily, these grades. So that's the accusation.
And
so, in other words, the university is not admitting that it's related to my pedagogical method, that I had explained how this was going to work, and so on.
What is your pedagogical method?
Well, one of the important things to allow discourse in the classroom and to allow freedom and a horizontal and democratic classroom is to remove the instrument of power that the professor has over the students, which are the grades, the grading. Otherwise, the students try to read your mind. They're very obedient. They're trying to find out, and they allow themselves to be told, you know, what they're going to hand in, how they're going to produce it, when they're going to hand it in, irrespective of whether they've had time to understand it, reflect on it, discuss it, and so on. So students are driven to this place where they can no longer discriminate whether or not they understand something. And what they would like to do, and it drives the intrinsic interest for the subject out of the student, and simply makes them obedient. It's a terrible thing. I've witnessed the effects of it in the upper year physics courses. It's a recognized problem by researchers in the area of physics education research, and so I was trying to implement methods to alleviate that, to try and fix it, to try to create a proper learning environment in the classroom.
Could you give us a bit of an idea of how that was done in the practical organization of the course?
Well, the priorities, the order in which we do things, are determined by the students. So the students have a large say in what's going to be done, and in that way they can it's easier to be motivated if you're deciding, if you're seeing what you're interested in and are able to follow it. So there's a lot of self-directed work. The classroom is many different things. For example, there are sort of discussions, whole class discussions at various times, where the subject can deviate in all kinds of directions, just following a line of inquiry and so on. So a lot of students, for example, would react, well, we never know what we're going in those cases, we never know where we're going. We don't have a plan. We're not told, you know, for 10 minutes we'll cover this and then we'll cover that. So the students were, several of them, were made uncomfortable by some of these methods, as you can imagine, because they've had 4 years of, you know, just virtually every course being the same and being organized in the same way.
And
so it was destabilizing, but it was it's the kind of destabilizing that could bring them to a place where they're more able to think for themselves and become independent thinkers.
And in terms of grading?
In terms of grading, I explained that, you know, I didn't want to rank order them, that I was sure that they were all going to do well from where they're at. They were going to contribute completely, and so I said, you'll all get an A+. And I followed them. I verified this. They reported their progress. We were in contact all the time. And what I observed was that the students did perform much better than they would have in, you know, under traditional circumstances, simply because they were able to think for themselves. And they, given that freedom, they took it and went with it.
Now, you've been using this method, I gather, for a few years.
Yeah.
Has the university previously tried to discipline you for that approach to teaching and learning?
Well, 1 year, my dean said, your grades were too high in a first-year course. So after they approved the grades, they decided to discipline me on the basis of a graph that showed that my grades had been sort of average for many years, and then all of a sudden they were higher in a first-year physics course. So there have been various little attempts at discipline in this way, but nothing that could hold up before a labor law arbitrator. None of these charges, whenever they've gone towards an arbitrator, have held up. The university has often had to apologize or retract discipline attempts and so on. None of this has ever held up. So the university has been, of course, trying to constrain me and direct me, but it has never worked. Things changed when the new president, Alan Rock, arrived on campus in July 2008. Things became much more rough at that point for me. That's when things really started to happen. There was a much greater disregard for due process and for any sense of being fair. That's when I was removed from all teaching. I was given a one-day suspension without pay for my blog that's critical of the university. There was an unannounced lockout for my laboratory. My students and I were locked out. The lock was actually changed from one day to the next. My laboratory was dismantled. It was begun to be dismantled. I was removed from all my graduate students. The graduate students suffered reprisals and intimidations by the administration. The university imposed a unilateral deregistration of my undergraduate research student. My research associate of 12 years was fired, wasn't even told, simply that the pay stopped, the contract was breached. I was suspended from all my duties. I was physically barred from campus. I was arrested when I came to do my Cinema Politica series that I've been doing for years, and charged with trespass. That's going to go to court on May 22nd. The university put out public statements, press releases, basically defaming me. And ultimately, I was dismissed on March 31st in a move that the union said was just outrageous, that it was a denial of natural justice and a violation of collective agreement rules and so on.
So Alan Rock, the former cabinet minister in the Chrétien government, minister of health, and later UN ambassador in the Martin liberal government, he becomes president in July 2008.
Yes.
Why then the motivation, in your view, to suddenly escalate and become increasingly arbitrary in its repression of your teaching, your research, and ultimately your job?
Mm. Well, the problem is they don't tell you. There's nothing transparent about this. They don't say, we're motivated by this, we want to get rid of you for this reason. It's the opposite of that, right? It's very secretive and they hide it from you. But you see from the actions and you try to understand why they're being so bold, why they're breaking these rules in this way and using their power instead of rationality and so on. And the thing that I see is, you look at the politics of it. I believe this is deeply political. I mean, Alan Rock is completely and obviously aligned with Israel policy. When he was ambassador to the UN, he was the one who got Canada to change its foreign policy from abstaining on human rights resolutions with regards to Palestine to voting with against those resolutions with the U.S. and Israel. So that was a big change in Canadian foreign policy. That was Alan Rock. If you follow his career, he's always been along that line. And even since arriving on the University of Ottawa campus, it's been quite dramatic. For example, at one point, the PIRG here, the Public Interest Research Group, which is a student group, refused to sponsor a Hillel event on campus. That made it into, you know, the usual CanWest newspapers. And Alan Rock responded by publicly saying he was going to look for administrative ways to cut the PIRG funding. He said this on his blog. He also tried to, he strong-armed the president of the student union to publicly distance himself from the PIRG and so on. So these are very direct interventions into student politics whenever it touches this question of Israel and Palestine. So it's been very, very obvious where he stands on these questions. And my record is also well known through my blog, ufowatch.blogspot.com, through the guests I've had in my classrooms, because I have created activism courses officially, and through my writings, and there have been many attempts at discipline against me for these questions. For example, you know, the Jewish Student Association would come into the classroom and then complain to the university about a speaker or the use of as silly as the use of a website that a speaker was using that they didn't like, this kind of thing. And I would be disciplined for those things. In fact, the very first discipline that went to arbitration originated with a complaint in relation to comments and critiques of Zionism that had been made. So, and this all came out at the arbitration. So there's a record of that on the one side, in my position, and on the other side you have this new president who is vehemently a protector of Israeli policy and so on. So that's one way that we can understand it.
What support have you received to gain back your job and your research laboratory, etc.?
Well, there's a lot of support. I mean, the Canadian Association of University Teachers has initiated and is funding an independent committee of inquiry that will take several years to do its work and to look at, you know, boxes and boxes of documents. Just from my side, I think there's 8 crates of documents that they'll be studying. There's an online petition that has over 1,000 signatures, many academics and professors from around the world, and community members, concerned people, and so on. I've received many invitations, and I've taken them on to go to campuses across Canada and talk about these issues. I was a speaker at an academic freedom conference in New York. Everywhere I go, people sign a written petition, a paper petition, and express support and so on. So there's a lot of support of that type. In addition, we have a union at the University of Ottawa, and I expect that the union will take on my grievance against my dismissal. So there will be a legal battle that will also take a number of years.
This is a very long prospect then of trying to regain your employment. Do you see the hearing actually not concluding for some years?
Oh yeah, it takes over a year only to book the arbitrators. It'll be a panel of 3 arbitrators, and just to agree on who they're going to be and to book their time and so on. That in itself, there's a long wait there. And that's after the union has formally agreed to take on your case, and there's a collective agreement process before you even get to that point. So it's going to take some time, for sure. Power has this advantage where they can simply make these decisions, impose them, and then you have to go through a lengthy legal process to examine them and to reverse them. Yeah, that's typical.
And what plans do you have to continue your research, your work in physics?
Well, I mean, this battle is taking all of my time, all of my energy these days, you know, media interviews, writing about it. I do a lot of work on freedom of information. I've made as many as 20 freedom of information requests. I have to analyze those documents. They virtually all go to mediation and appeal there's a lot of work here that I do just as part of the battle. So physics is taking a second place. Environmental science is taking a second place now. There are many projects that are not finished. I mean, I help my graduate students who have not yet graduated, help them resubmit papers and those kinds of things. I still do that regularly. But science is on hold until we settle this. And I think it's an important societal debate. This kind of thing tells you the state of academic freedom in Canada. If a university can do this and get away with it, it means that academic freedom is in a very weak position at the moment in our society. So there are a lot of people are interested in finding out, where we're at. What kind of a state do we live in, where these kinds of things can happen, where dissent is punished to this degree, and this is effectively by powerful institutions. I think that's what we're finding out.
Well, thanks for taking time both to speak with us today, and the best wishes in keeping this before the public and as a matter of wider and wider concern. Thank you, Denis.
Thank you, Mordecai. It was a pleasure.
I've been speaking with Professor Denis Roncourt at the University of Ottawa. Besides teaching physics and environmental science there, he had organized a film club, as he referred to, and he has a regular weekly radio program as well. For further information, you can check Denis' website. It's very simple, academicfreedom.ca.